throughout the U.S. and Europe. He has been seen in such venues as PS1, the Drawing Center, the Brooklyn Museum, the Kitchen, White Columns, Sculpture Center, and Smack Mountain. And Celia's co-directed Flipside with artist Carolyn Cox and Alternative Exhibition Space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn from 1997 to 2001. His most recent constructed piece was a turntable square drum set called Square From Level and Inline for the show B-Side at the Sorbonne Gallery in Brooklyn and the main tower of bass drums at Exit Art, New York City. So we're glad to have you here. And I think we're going to be talking a little bit about the sound aspect of this work too, which I think is really related to your work. So let's just take a moment to look around at the setup in terms of how this is done. And this is installed a little bit differently than when it was originally shown.
Yeah. It was 16 millimeter projectors, and he had just started doing film pieces, just out of grad school, really. He was in San Francisco, and the 16 millimeter projectors, the spools he got, they were 10 minutes, and so that's the duration of time each one of these pieces is. So there's four different sequences, and they're all 10 minutes, and he's applying grease paint. And we're into it, the second one. The sequence is white, so he starts just skin, bare upper torso, white, and then red, green, and black. And he's layering it upon himself. So we're into the kind of right now the second sequence.
Aspect to this work that has an endurance quality. Of course, he's known for using his own body in a lot of his work. And the idea of bringing a studio practice kind of into the exhibition space, I think, is another part. But the fact that this is an endurance work is, I think, an interesting point, that he has to endure the reel of the camera, that 10 minute period, and then we actually have to see all sequences put together. You'll notice that we're not using projectors,
The 16 millimeter
projectors. 16 millimeter projectors, we're using these DVD projectors, and that the sound that we're listening to is actually a recording that was added later, because we know that DVD projectors do not make the sound. But the sound element was really an important thing that the artist wanted to add on to the work. And that was something I think that we...
It's critical, because when you listen to the pieces in silence, it's a completely different feel. And when you listen to the projectors, they have a real rhythmic drumming quality. You know, it's about like this. It kind of sets a tone, but it varies. It fluctuates the sound of it, the pitch. There's also a drone going on, and Nauman was really into, as much as the art of the times, what fueled this work, it were the experimental composers like Terry Riley and Steve Reich and Philip Glass. He's a musician himself. He played bass and guitar, and he was playing in bands that they put together at Davis around this time. And part of what gives these a real power and makes them, you know, watchable for this amount of time is he has a very powerful, intuitive, rhythmic sense. And it's a really integral part of it, the sound. And the other thing that's kind of interesting about these, as we watch these, like in this sequence, they're about 10 minutes, but towards 6 or 7 minutes, he's basically done applying the paint. And then he's got that, it's a little bit time to kill, but that's when he starts playing with shadows and moving his body around and getting a little fussier with parts of it. So when you really kind of get deep into it, there's a lot of little subtle things happening in the shape of the 10 minutes. But they're still relatively improvised. They're not the same. And part of it, I think he's reacting to the physicalness of the paint, and as it gets layered on and he's doing it longer and longer, I think it does, like you're saying, it gets into the endurance thing. And so that changes his reaction. Plus, I think just taking on these different masks or identity with the different colors, that he's reacting to that also.
Yeah. We've also talked about, I mean, it's called art makeup 1-4, so this is makeup. It's kind of funny to call it art makeup.
Right.
Because in some ways, we don't think of makeup as like putting on makeup as art. Although there was a big movement in the 70s and late 60s of artists using makeup in interesting sorts of ways that way too. But the idea that he was a painter and he was trained as a painter, and that this, you had said earlier when we were speaking that this was a perhaps like his last painting. It's an interesting thing about to think about it in terms of this kind of situation. What might make it like a painting?
Yeah. And I brought, it might be a good time to throw in for a couple minutes the Steve Reich. I brought a piece, a rhythmic piece by Steve Reich. It's just clapping. And I was playing around with just adding a few remix things to this. And if it's at kind of a low level, the same as the projector sound, it kind of adds interesting element and it lets you hear the kind of experimental music that he was listening to and influenced him. So I'll throw that on for just a second.
And it was interesting when I was speaking to the painter, and she was saying that the size of the book sound onto the meter, I don't know, why would you want to do that? And while there is a difference, it didn't really come together to me until I was talking to Tim, and he was talking about the influence of the music at the time, and how there was like, audio. I mean, there's a minimalist quality to having an audio like this that makes sense after talking to it. So I found that was kind of interesting. Culture or other things, other disciplines. So I think that's a great point. And I think body painting was a big deal. It was again, the idea of using your body as a canvas. So tell us a little bit more about this piece.
Well, it's a great piece. Steve Reich, you know, went to West Africa, studied African drumming, and it's really based on like this Ghana bell pattern that is kind of the backbone and the basic structural unit of a lot of African music, which is really rhythm-based. And then what happens is the two musicians doing it, who are both clapping, play it together in unison, and then one of the musicians goes off. There's 12 beats in each measure, and he goes off one beat for the pattern and repeats it 8 times, and it basically cycles around. So it's like out of phase, like if you were hearing almost like a Doppler effect kind of thing, or if you were hearing it in two rooms, or you started recording machines at different points of time really close. And so it phases around, and then it ends when they're back together again. It's very short. It's like 4 or 5 minutes. But it kind of has a similar rhythmic propulsion feel of the projectors and kind of the hand thing he's got going in doing this. Plus, I thought it was interesting that his piece is really about hands, and this piece is all hands. There's no instruments. It's just clapping, and it's slightly sacrilegious, but
I mean, to me, it's not really sacrilegious in that that artists are influenced by each other.
Yeah.
And it's only sacrilegious if the artist, you know, feels like it's upstaging his own work. But the fact that I think artists cross-pollinate ideas,
yeah,
and that they're influenced and give each other permission to do different kinds of things, and that's part of a larger idea about art making and culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was cool with it when I read that he chopped up an Ed Ruscha book. you know, I said, well, he can't say boo, so yeah. Plus it's hardly overpowering it, so I think it's, you know, it's a gentle remix. I'd love to see it just to see if it would be out of phase just a little bit, so that when his hand's here, you're waiting a second for that hand to get there, which would make it a little trippier and probably a little harder to watch. Because now when your eye goes around, it's synchronized, perfectly synchronized. But I actually don't know how...
Originally they were shown one after another. So the idea of having four simultaneous images was something that he felt he wanted to do this time.
Oh, so that wouldn't have been an issue then.
Yeah, okay. Usually there's like a reel-to-reel projector, and they've got a large loop at the top, and it just loops through all four of the different colors, so you just see them straight on. Just one.
But he wanted them to be seen as projectors, and so it was only until we realized that we couldn't, first of all, the expense of having four projectors, second of all, the upkeep of constantly making sure that when the film breaks, if there's someone here to hear. So that this worked out the best. It's, yeah. The drumming is interesting to me because it has been kind of a cycle. So, and that's a really interesting part.
But yeah, so this is when talking to the, when Evelyn Hankins was talking to the artist, he said he wanted it, to working with the artist, he wanted it projected on these four walls. And this is reminiscent of more recent work where he projects on four walls. So that makes sense.
Yeah, and his work got, after this, because this is very early, and this is even before he was doing the videos, which gave him like, much, you know, and he wasn't limited to 10 minutes, so those really become endurance pieces, because, you know, he was doing pieces like he'd tape out a square on the floor, and he would do these weird dances like this, and have to walk on the line, and make up some like silly walk, like a Monty Python silly walk, but repeat it for an hour and just keep going. So when you'd have instructions for people to do the pieces, like in museums in Europe and that, he'd have to say you have to get like a real dancer and they have to be like really serious, and they, you know, he knew exactly what he wanted for that kind of stuff. And he was doing pieces like when this was happening, one that I haven't seen but sounds great is, and the description kind of says it all, bouncing a ball off the floor and the ceiling and creating different rhythmic patterns with it. You know, so he's sitting there for an hour going, da-doom, 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 da-doom. I mean, I can see the piece without having seen it, just from watching all the other stuff. It's great. Like,
I think the endurance part seems to be a really important part, which is it's almost like a joke. It becomes serious because you do it for so long.
Yeah.
We were talking about Buster Keaton earlier, looking at, because he has this real straight-faced humor. I see a lot of humor here, but he does it for so long and keeps such a straight face that after a while, it's this really funny kind of, he's on the fence between something that's very humorous and very serious feeling.
Especially the last couple minutes, he's like, he's doing little shadow characters, and he's really playing with the shadows and doing a lot with his fingers and that, but not never like he never cracks a smile, and he just keeps it, but that's an important part of it,
and serious part, I think, is the,
and this is the last one where it's black over the I guess he's gotten the green and red, so this is the black and
we were also talking about that when you're trained as a painter, there's these kind of like formal issues that you become very aware of. And so he's really interested in balancing both kind of formal aspects of art making, but also kind of going off on this whole other performance aspect and the whole endurance aspect and things that aren't typical for painting. So you start to see, I mean, I noticed when I watched through these colors that the background starts to play off of his the color of the makeup in different sorts of ways. The white actually makes the background look very different than the black, and it becomes also about what can be photographed in some ways, in other ways too.
Yeah, and the white is the one I watched, the one I could get a hold of on YouTube, the full duration of it. You could get a lot of little snippets, but the whole thing, the white one, it's very much more austere, and he's really transformed. He's much more androgynous and asexual in that one, because every, you know, the chest hair and the nipples and everything's gone, and he's just white. It's almost like the What's the theater, the Japanese, is it no? Or it's sort of like kabuki.
No.
But no, no is the one, is yeah, total minimal and very stark. That's what it really reminds me of. And towards the end of that one, because of the white, the shadows become really powerful. And you know, and that will come around. I mean, we started close to that, so I'm sure everyone's going to hang around for like 3 hours and just do the obsessive thing. But it's fun to do that with a piece. That's what's been great about doing this. I rarely do that where I just take one thing.
Yeah.
And I did that with when I was teaching at the Phillips. They have a little de Kooning that's amazing, and I would only go and see that de Kooning after teaching. I wouldn't look at anything else in the museum, and that was really fun to just say, this is the only paint I'm going to look at for 20 minutes. And you do start finding things that you couldn't imagine were there, and this is a little like that too, when you just stick with it.
And when you figure that an artist, how much time an artist spends making a work, and that the artwork is not only a total amount of labor, but also an entire career and a life experience put into the work, you want to give it more than the 30 seconds that we might, you know, when we just walk through a gallery. There's an immense richness in each work, so that's partly the philosophy behind his talks. But also, I think definitely, he makes us have to stay and watch in a certain sort of way by doing this.
Yeah, a little child came in with her family when I was in here just watching it beforehand. And it was great to see people's responses, but she just comes in and she looks and she goes, it's annoying. And she was gone. That was it. And I'm sure he's fine with that, but I just love that. She like, that was it. That was it. She was gone. But I wanted to say, hey, wait. Kid, come on in. Give it a chance.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and can we open it up to
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's definitely.
Do people have any comments about this work or things that have occurred to them while we've been standing here?
Well, I just had a comment about the noise.
Uh-huh.
And having seen a whole exhibit just now, I always thought the noise was very annoying and much more annoying than the clapping. It would be nicer to have
But I also think that Bruce Nauman wants to annoy you.
Well, I know.
I think that's a big part of the work, too. That's that kind of...
So I think replacing with the clapping is sort of... making it a little bit less...
Yeah.
I actually find it very exciting. And the reason is that if you look at some more contemporary videos, they are so slick and so content-less that this is really exciting to look at that because you are actually looking at the artist who is struggling with some definition. Both of sculpture and identity, but like even looking at it now, it almost seems really like a painting. And having that with it is sometimes, I think, also talks about, as you say, about certain period of time. And to me, it's exciting that it's locked in time, but it still has something to say, of course, now, but that it doesn't have the advertising slickness which we seem to be seeing so much.
And the sound marks the time, so we get a sense of the, even though it's not no longer frames, we get a sense of the frame going through the machine on some unconscious level, that the image is being made as we are watching it, and those sounds seem to connect it to this machine for me, yeah.
He actually chose to do just sound in the Tate Modern Turbine Hall. When he got that honor a few years back of being the artist to do the huge turbine hall at the Tate Modern Hall,
mm-hmm.
Just loudspeakers all over as you went through. And it was a number of years ago. It was at least probably 5 years.
Yeah, I never saw that piece.
I don't remember the actual sound, but that's all it was sound. There was no art other than, so it shows how much how important sound is to it.
Yeah.
Well, and it dates it for me, too, because I walked in here and I immediately thought, oh, this is an old piece because of the sound. And I think, mentally put the rails up there in my head until I looked up and realized they weren't there. It's like listening to an LP on vinyl as opposed to the digital. I know that that recording is from then. And that when our kids listen to those things, they grow up watching the school movies on the reel. They always watch them on the television screen with no sound. And they don't even recognize what that sound is.
Yeah. Mystery sound.
But, you know, this kid who comes in here doesn't recognize that sound as real. It's just noise in the room.
Yeah.
So it dates it as a work of art for me.
plus when you see images now, I mean, everyone's used to surfing, so you react quickly. So all she did is she was going like this, and she said, that's that, and she went to another channel, and that's just in the... So that's what's great about seeing these pieces that are... I mean, you could call this minimal, post-minimal, but it stays on this one thing for a long time. But it's good to... It's good to do that. Yeah, he's looking in the corner. I mean, that's a...
responding to himself, too.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's actually him doing that or if it's actually what people project on.
Yeah.
But look at each one. He never makes his poses with the different colors that he does in black.
It's an interesting thing because, I mean, he is looking at the shadow. We were talking about him. He has his extra time since he got the makeup on, and he's fully covered, and so he has to come up with other business.
Yeah.
So it is a little, maybe, I would say he's improv-ing a little. From his going off of this. Like your body as a canvas, your body as a sculpture,
sure.
You become this thing once you make it into art, and then it's like, how do you experience yourself as a thing? That's kind of what I get when I look at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm this thing, and I'm no longer human, so what am I?
Yeah. And it also relates over to the viewers. They connect with their body, too.
Yeah, we were deciding if we should have stools or not, and then we thought, well, we should make this an endurance piece for all of you. But there is that aspect. I think there's an aspect that asks for that kind of involvement, you know.
I was just thinking about, like, even coins. Here you have, you know, tattoos or body art, you have the body as a canvas, and then there's, like, even coins and the body as a paintbrush or some of the 60s. So,
yeah.
Happening.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, he was, the funny thing about this work too, he really wasn't showing, no one was really interested in this work that much, and he was doing it in the studio. It was really about studio practice. He had this thing he said, I'm an artist, I'm in the studio, so anything I do in the studio is art. And that's where a lot of that work, he would just film himself, no one else was in there, and he'd do all this stuff that reminds me a little bit of a very precocious, like, 13-year-old either locking themselves in the bathroom or being in the basement and no one else in the family cares what they're doing. It has that quality, which I think is great. So this is the beginning here to get a sense of the...
But I think I've seen those early videos, which is just him walking in and out of the camera, being in the studio, and I think that's a really important idea that artists look at now, which is that anything that happens in the studio is art, you know. And I think that idea is carried through to contemporary artistic practice, and especially a lot of emerging artists think about those kinds of ideas. I mean, all these artists are now being taught in school, and so what we're seeing more and more are artists reacting to these ideas, but from the standpoint of contemporary culture. How does this make sense to contemporary culture? So when you're talking about the 10-minute reels, I'm thinking, well, there's about 7 minutes available on YouTube to make work. So you see, everything has an endurance of seven
minutes.
Right,
right,
now. Yeah.
Are you getting to the part two, part three?
Yeah. Okay.
Part of the art. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I'm grease painting, this is a
I mean, but what keeps this from being like theater or performance? I was just thinking, like, a lot of people put up makeup for Halloween. So he's having to do something that makes it not just feel like that.
It's art makeup.
It's art makeup.
Yeah. So what is the name?
I think it's the extension of studio practice into time, which is what with the use of film was used. That's what I think. It's on the edge between sculpture, painting.
And he was doing a lot of body art during this same time, you know, before, because he was in, this is when he had this San Francisco studio, a little storefront. And it was maybe, 3 years after grad school, and then he went to New York, 3 or 4 years. So he really did a ton of work that is still having an impact. I mean, he did one piece, cast his steel chair in concrete, and it's been the crux of one artist's whole, you know, vocabulary. It's like a throwaway noun, and that's how his impact has been that big. And he was doing great pieces that related to his body. Then, like, he did cast the left side of his torso measured his torso, I mean his whole body, every 10 inches, and then he did it in neon, but then he said he stretched it to 20 inches so he'd be twice as tall. So there's always, it's kind of got this absurdist thing, but very you know, like mathematical, because he studied before he went out to Davis, he was, you know, mathematics and philosophy, and then he switched to painting. So the other thing about this piece, he's for someone in their 20s, he's done a lot, he's got a lot to draw upon. It's very mature work, and
I mean, you also think about the certain amount of courage to say, I'm going to come up with a practice that ranges in all the mediums, you know? I mean, I would think he's a little unconscious, because I can't imagine. I mean, it's something you discover as you go, but I mean, the fact that he made a body of work that was very different than just being a painter or just being a sculptor, but that the idea was to span all the mediums, I think is always really interesting when early artists do that.
I think he had to be good at shutting distractions out and focusing on what the piece was about, or they would have gotten too theoretical or too formal.
Yeah.
He's very conscious of our history. I mean, this is the same time that he did the New York Bound.
Yeah, yeah.
And the artist is found, and the window of wall sign, all these things take from the same.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was doing photographs with his hands, with mirrors, that kind of thing. So he was doing a lot of stuff with his hands, a lot of things with his body. He did like a piece, cast knees of 5 famous artists, that is just this silly casting of knees. It just looks like these little indents, but that's
actually awesome.
Oh, hand to mouth.
You know, I also find another thing which for me really unites all of this work. There is a certain kind of confrontation intention there. Throughout all of his works, and of course sometimes this confrontation goes really loud, and obviously that comes from his background of philosophy, when he's talking really about identity perception, body in space, and things of that kind. And I see that there is this sweat through all of his best work.
I wonder how kind of deliberate, you know, the illusions to other things of the creator. Because I was thinking about your comment on the background, the color background, how the color is being some effects. This video is exactly coincident with the publication of Albert's interaction with color differences. And the meanings, you know, John's is doing the meanings just 2 years before this. They ask meanings. And so,
that's funny, because I was thinking of Albert's too, and I don't know why, except for maybe.
Yeah.
But the idea, the contrast between the background and the foreground, and the kind of But I think it can be read in all kinds of ways, which is great about it. There's a lot of levels. The fact that it's a human being who's using himself to do that becomes a whole other level. So then it becomes not only about, I mean, we haven't gone into that at all, but it's not only about you know, color, but also about skin. And
we were talking about that last night, exactly.
Yeah. Well, maybe you'll be able to stay for the rest of the colors again. So thank you very much for coming. And thank you very much for doing that.
Thank you.
That was great. And it was
fun. Thank you.